This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support comes from Brian Lowe Financial. It's the start of the impeachment trial in the United States Senate, and appropriately, we have Don Cashew with us, who not only is a former U.S. congressman, but also a former United States attorney, practicing lawyer here in Baton Rouge. Cashew Ewing Law Firm is an underwriter for WRKF, and Don Cashew spent some years in the state legislature as well before becoming a member of Congress. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, as reported in the New York Times today, has unveiled some ground rules for the president's trial that attempts to speed up the proceeding and refuses to admit the evidence against the president unearthed by the House without a separate vote. So it's going to be a lively event, as you can imagine, and it looks like it's a foregone conclusion that the president will be acquitted because he's likely to get almost all of the Republican votes in the U.S. Senate, and almost all of the Democrats, if not all, will vote to convict the president, and it takes 67 votes to remove a president from office. Same threshold, by the way, in Louisiana. If a governor were to be impeached, majority in the House, two-thirds in the Senate, and Huey Long missed being convicted on impeachment charges by two votes back before he was assassinated, of course. 877-217-5757 is your number. If you'd like to join the conversation in another way, talk@talklouisiana.org is our email address. And Don Cashew, you've been in a few federal courthouses, and we're in somewhat unique territory, but 21 years ago, President Clinton faced the same scenario that President Trump is facing, and the Senate couldn't even get a majority on either article of impeachment when Clinton was on trial. What do you anticipate with this go-around?
Well, Jim, thanks again for having me. It's always a privilege to be with you. I think your analysis at the beginning was correct. I don't see the Senate voting to voting to oust him. You know, certainly not by the two-thirds that's going to be necessary. Even if there are even one or two Republicans, that doesn't, you know, reach that threshold.
And there may not even be evidence provided. The majority leader apparently does not want that, but there are some Republicans who were reportedly leaning in that direction. We're going to find out how much mojo Mitch McConnell has.
Well, I mean, that is the discussion. And, you know, the Constitution is pretty quiet on – not pretty quiet. It's totally silent on the actual procedure in the Senate. Except that we know that it has to be by a two-thirds vote, and that the presiding officer is the Chief Justice. But in terms of the procedures, that's up to the Senate, and it's by a majority vote, and they could change it in mid session. But it sounds like it's going to be an introducing document where they're going to vote today on that to determine. The how it goes. I think they're first going to have. I think right now the proposal is that each side is going to be given 24 hours, and then to give an opening statement, then 16 hours to have questions. The questions are in writing that actually the Chief Justice has to ask the questions, and then they will vote on whether or not to have. Witness to call witnesses and to allow documents or any new evidence or even to allow the evidence that the House obtained to go into evidence here. So a lot is still up in the air, you know, and I don't know, you know, if we will see any witnesses in this case.
Do you see any parallels between this and what happened with President Clinton 21 years ago?
The parallels, I mean, they're two certainly starkly different impeachment documents. I mean, you know, he was impeached for perjury, as you recall, and certainly there's no discussion of perjury in this case. In fact, that's the big defense now that the Republicans have, or President Trump's defense team has, is that there was no crime alleged here, and that abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. Well, first of all, the obstruction of Congress charge or article, they argue that, you know, all they were doing was defend, you know, it was a defense strategy, a valid exercise of executive privilege, and therefore that that's not an impeachable article. I think that that's a pretty fair argument. If the, if Congress wanted to, you know, proceed down that path, they could have, you know, gone to the courts to try to get some relief, and they didn't do that. So I sort of agree with that. The second one, the more substantive argument, though, is novel from the standpoint of the general scholarly history on the impeachment process. They're saying that the abuse of power allegation, it doesn't rise to the level of a crime, and therefore it's not an impeachable offense under the Constitution. You know, and the Constitution specifically says in Article 2 that a person that's committed treason, bribery, or other high crime or misdemeanor, and they're saying other high crime or misdemeanor means just that. It has to be another crime like treason or bribery, and that abuse of power doesn't rise to that level. But they have now Alan Dershowitz, you know, the Harvard constitutional lawyer, who argued or at least had the opinion in back in the 90s when President Clinton was going through it, I think, that, you know, you did not have to allege a crime. But he has certainly changed that tune. And it's an interesting way to address that, and that way you just cut it all out. They may file a motion to dismiss early on and say, look, this is an invalid impeachment because there was no crime alleged.
877-217-5757 is your number, and you mentioned bribery, and in this case, it does appear that the president asked for something from a foreign power. In exchange for delivering aid to that country, which was already approved by Congress. And some would say that is bribery. And the president has said that it was a perfect phone call. And he, of course, has maintained his innocence, saying that this is a hoax, a sham, and that he is being unfairly prosecuted, and that it's all political. Well, you are a U.S. attorney, and U.S. attorneys do their best to be non-political. I believe that. But they all serve at the pleasure of U.S. presidents. So how can you have a position like that without there being some political component?
Well, first of all, if any public official ever calls a U.S. attorney and says, look, we want you to prosecute or go after so-and-so, that U.S. attorney is advised to document that call or document that communication, and actually bring it up the chain to make sure that if you actually do or don't abide by the wishes of the public official, you have some a legitimate backup to show why you took the action or didn't take the action you did. For instance, that's what happened with Comey. You know, he documented, he had a memo to file when he had this conversation early on in the Trump administration that he thought he was being pressured to take a certain action. So he did what was what we're taught to have done, and that is to, you know, to make sure you document any political pressure. So yes, that's not to say that there aren't political, you know, reasons that go into some prosecutions, but you really are taught not to do that, and certainly I think most good prosecutors try to keep the politics out of their decisions.
Do you think it's a good practice for presidents, and it happens on both parties, they generally clean the slate. There are very few U.S. attorneys who survive when a new president comes in. Is that a good practice to have?
I don't have a problem with that, Jim. I really don't. I think there's something to say about continuity of office, and I understand that, to have a U.S. attorney that knows the office and knows the different cases and is familiar. And so, yeah, there is an argument for retaining them. But, each administration does have certain priorities, and for this administration, it came in much more focused on violent crime, as opposed to the prior administration, which was more focused maybe on public corruption and white collar crimes. So I don't have a problem with an appointment process where new U.S. attorneys are appointed by the president and the administration that may have a different policy behind what they would like the office to accomplish. Plus, I think just having new blood in a bureaucracy is not a bad thing. I really believe that it's. I don't think anybody should do any of those jobs for longer than a couple terms.
877-217-5757 for former United States Attorney, Lawyer Don Casu of Casu Ewing Law Firm, an underwriter for WRKF. And this is a man who also served with distinction briefly in the United States House of Representatives.
Very
we'll talk
briefly.
More with Don Casu and go to the phone lines when we return after this 90-second pause. This is Jim Inkster. We're glad you're listening to Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. It's the start of the impeachment trial for President Donald John Trump. This happened 21 years ago. Trump actually is 2 months older than Bill Clinton. When Bill Clinton was facing trial, he was in his second term, and it was 1999, and he was a man of 52 years old. Donald Trump is about to be 74 years old, and he's in his first term, and this is an election year. And there is an election component to what is about to happen in the United States Senate, not only for the president, but for those serving in the Senate. And on the Democratic side, we have several senators who either were or are presidential aspirants. Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota, Bernie Sanders of Vermont, Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts, they're in the Senate, as are Cory Booker and Kamala Harris. And so it is a situation that is replete with political activity, and the president, of course, believes this is a political witch hunt. What do you think? 877-217-5757, Daniel in Sherwood. Daniel, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning.
Yes,
my question is, Mitch McConnell has already said that he's working closely with the White House on the defense, for the defense. And several senators have already broadcast their vote, yet they all took a vote, or they all took an oath for impartiality. I don't understand how the two of those jive.
All right. Good question from Daniel. What do you think?
Well, I think you nailed it just a second ago. As Alexander Hamilton described in the Federalist 65, he said specifically, the offenses, you know, the misconduct. He didn't say that it had to be a crime. He said impeachable offenses arising from the misconduct of public men, or in other words, from the abuse or violation of some public trust. So sort of consistent with one of the articles of impeachment in this case. But he went on to say that such offenses were political, as they relate chiefly to injuries done immediately to the society itself. So I don't think anybody believes that politics won't come into play here. And it is by nature a political process once the impeachment process starts and to the conclusion. I don't think the reason President Clinton, I believe, was not impeached was not convicted, was in large part because of his popularity. And I don't think anybody, thought that the crime rose to the level of impeachment anyway, but all the allegation, he clearly did not tell the truth under oath. But I think his popularity certainly played a role in that. President Nixon's popularity, and he was never formally impeached, but he was convinced that he would have been impeached. It had passed the House Judiciary, and he was convinced because of some of the evidence that had come out through the tapes, through his actions with firing of the independent counsel, his ratings had plummeted, and therefore I think. You can't take the politics out of this. I think everybody knows who's looked at these You know, there's not, there haven't been many in the past. You know, Andrew Johnson was impeached, but narrowly
he escaped removal
yeah. by one vote. But it is political.
And on perjury, which is what Bill Clinton was accused of, how many times is somebody in this country charged with perjury? If you went to a deposition, for example, when people are divorcing each other, I mean, there's just one lie after the other under oath by both sides usually.
Yeah, I think when it comes to the delicate, you know, nature of the discussion, I think people sort of put themselves in his shoes, although I think most people said he shouldn't have, obviously everybody said he shouldn't have done what he did. But you know, they understood kind of why he lied.
Well, and it was President Trump, and we'll keep playing this because it's relevant. Just 12 years ago, when he was a man of 62, let's hold off on it right now, Matt, but he claimed that the Clinton impeachment was a sham and that George Bush should have been impeached because of sending Americans off to war under false pretenses, which, of course, was true. 877-217-5757. Jim calling, and Jim is at the Mall of Louisiana. Hope shopping's good today. Hi, Jim.
Well, he was by the Mall of Louisiana and has since driven past. I've got a question. Isn't lying to Congress something that you can go to jail for? So when Mitch McConnell and, our own Gomer Pyle Kennedy has already stated that they are working with the administration and have said exactly what they're going to vote, that they, in taking their oath for this trial, have violated their oath and have therefore lied to Congress and should therefore be prosecuted.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, that's a creative look at it. I mean, certainly congressmen and women have a certain immunities for their public speech. If they actually were sworn as a witness and they lied, then I think you'd be correct if they were discovered to have lied under oath.
877-217-5757 for Don Cashew, former U.S. attorney, former congressman, and practicing lawyer in Baton Rouge. David in Atlanta. Hi, David. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. Alan Dershowitz, President Trump's Harvard Law professor, attorney, said abuse of power is not a crime, therefore not impeachable. According to Lawrence Tribe of Harvard Law School, it need not be a violation of the law to be an impeachable offense. So certainly I think the president is guilty of abuse of power simply by denying and not honoring the subpoenas from the Congress, and furthermore requesting anything of value from a foreign power or person is a violation of the federal election campaign law. So there's two strikes right there that are legitimate reasons to vote to impeach Trump. But, you know, if the Republicans don't impeach him or convict him, that's fine with me, and I know they won't, because the American people are going to see it's a sham trial. And the Republicans have no respect for the Constitution and law and order, something Trump himself campaigned on.
You know, Jim, I appreciate the caller's ideas, and it sort of bothers me, though, that both sides are saying things like sham and, you know, that it's a sham trial. It was a sham impeachment. Our institutions are important, and when our public, becomes to believe that our institutions are not fair and that our public officials are not proceeding fairly, I think it's bad. And that's certainly part of the defense in this case, to delegitimize the impeachment process. They didn't put up a defense. And they specifically did not take part, Trump lawyers did not take part. But I don't want to go on the other side, too, to say that the Senate process, just because they're choosing to do it a certain way, is not legitimate. I don't necessarily agree with that.
Well, we have a political component to just about everything in American life, and it goes all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. And that was in evidence 20 years ago when the U.S. Supreme Court on a 5-4 vote stopped a recount in Florida, which probably would have made Albert Arnold Gore the president of the United States of America, and George Bush became the president. And these sides keep score. And, of course, the Democrats remember what happened to Clinton. And 21 years ago, one of the most fervent people calling for impeachment and conviction was none other than Lindsey Graham, who is now the biggest defender of the president, saying that the president was unfit for office, and that in and of itself was enough to remove him from office. Now he says, Lindsey Graham, the same U.S. senator from South Carolina, he was a congressman 21 years ago, that what President Trump did does not rise to the level of impeachment. What do you think? We'll go to the phone line some more with Don Cashew when we return. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Don Cashew in for another segment, the former United States attorney, former congressman, one of the most erudite and enlightened barristers in the world. And he is here talking about what's going on with the president facing an impeachment trial today. Now, last Friday, he was at the White House greeting the LSU football team as the Tigers went to the Oval Office and were greeted by the president, who even made reference, saying they were trying to impeach the, quote, SOB, and he got a big laugh. And I heard yesterday some of our callers say the president should not have used profanity in front of these fine young collegians, but I have a feeling they've heard some profane words from their coach a time or two, and we know at least one taped instance where the coach was using words far stronger than SOB. 877-217-5757 for Don Cashew. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. Well, first of all, the deposition that he sent to the Mueller report, which was like a phoned-in testimony, had 47 answers, which I don't remember. Basically, he's forbidden any witnesses to appear in the House investigation. He's incompetent. He probably has mentally instable. So, I'm sorry.
Well, all right. Well, we don't know that, and I give the president the benefit of the doubt. I don't think he's nuts. He's just a different breed of cat, different than any other president we've had. And he's accustomed to being sued and suing other people. In fact, he's sued far more people than have sued him. And in his divorce trial with Ivanka's the daughter of the president of the United States, took the fifth, I'm counting how many times, 97 times in his divorce deposition in 1990. I suspect that if Robert Mueller had questioned him, that he would have been taking the fifth quite a bit.
Yeah, and that's not an obstruction of justice, though.
You can do that as a citizen.
That's right. And so, I understand the dubiousness of 97 times doing that, but, it certainly doesn't rise to the level of obstruction of justice. And you bring up a good point, though. He's used to being sued. He's a fighter by nature. That's a big difference between President Nixon's defense. And, President Nixon, he was a fighter as well, but he just wasn't as skilled.
And he didn't have the votes.
Yeah, well, he didn't have the votes, but he wasn't as skilled as President Trump was. I don't know if Nixon had done a full-throated defense and was as good.
Well, and if there had been Fox News and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity.
Certainly President Trump has help there. But he's also pretty masterful when it comes to communicating to the public and especially to his base. And I think had he been in the same position as Nixon years ago, and it's the same dynamics as today. I don't know if he'd be. I don't know if he certainly wouldn't have resigned. And do you think 67 senators would vote to convict him there? I don't know.
Well, Trump has been on the ropes, as we know. He's had six bankruptcies. He's a man who's lived on the edge and is comfortable being there. Most of us would not be. And it's almost 74 years old. He's mastered the new medium. He knows how to communicate on Twitter to dominate the news cycle and to change the subject when necessary.
He's a master.
The great communicator even for those who disagree with the president, as I often do, is Donald Trump. Because in the new age, he has mastered the media and manipulates the media. Even when they're talking badly about him, it seems to work for him to the point where he was elected with just 46% of the votes, and this time he may be elected with 44 or 43%, depending on who the Democratic nominee is.
Well, I mean, I think you're right. And this discussion brings up discussions of Biden's corruption, you know, and so he's in a way, he's winning
alleged,
a little
alleged
bit.
Alleged corruption.
Well, yes, exactly. See? No. Yeah, did I say? I see. There you go. So I'm guilty of falling into that trap.
And here's a man, the president, who paid a Baton Rougean, the pornographic film star Stormy Daniels, $130,000 to be quiet during an election, didn't report it on his campaign finance forms, and he could have been tried on that. John Edwards almost went to jail for something much less than that, the former U.S. senator. And yet the president, within a day, there was a news story about him, and this is almost long forgotten. Jim on Interstate 10, you're on with Don Cashew. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Jim, another great show. My question for Don, as a former prosecutor, if he's enough detailed and informed of the current articles of impeachment that are before the Senate, if he were prosecuting this on the Senate floor, what article of impeachment would he emphasize the most? I guess my question is, and I'm not asking him if he agrees with the impeachment or not, I'm asking, as a prosecutor, what's the strongest prosecutorial move that he would make based on the charges that are being brought to the president? And I'll hang up and listen.
Well, I think, thank you, Jim. I know you're a Tiger fan. But I think, without a doubt, it's the abuse of power, in my mind, the abuse of power article, even though the president's defense team is saying that you have to have a quote, crime alleged for it to be a valid article of impeachment. I think that that's where certainly where the substance lies. I think the obstruction count article to me, you know, doesn't fly as well, because I think the House, if they really wanted to order those witnesses to appear, they had remedies for that. They could have gone to the courts for that, and they didn't. So I do think it's the abuse of power.
15 years ago, the president was a Democrat. Bill Cassidy was a Democrat. John Kennedy was a Democrat. And now they're all conservatives, and not just conservative Republicans, but they're not center-right, they're right-wing conservatives. And Cassidy and Kennedy are going to vote to acquit the president. There is almost a 100% chance of that. And after seeing what happened in the Superdome, they're political animals. They know that going against the president is not good for them keeping their U.S. Senate seats, as someone would say, their phony baloney jobs. How can you blame them?
Well, as we sort of started off this discussion, I mean, it is a political decision, and Alexander Hamilton recognized that way back, you know, when. So, you know, I certainly would hope that if a president was alleged to have killed somebody, that, you know, you would certainly be looking at a different outcome. But I think everybody's got a little cover on this with the defense that's being mounted. And, so I don't see them voting to convict in this case.
All right, and the listener has already chided me. I wasn't referring to me saying a U.S. Senate seat was a phony baloney job. I was quoting somebody else. So that is a distinction. Here's Mitch writing, the U.S. senators were sworn in as jurors for the impeachment trial, but a number of senators stated on TV they intend to dismiss the charges before the trial begins. If regular jurors were to say what verdict they will give before a trial even begins, wouldn't they be dismissed from the jury? Can Justice Roberts dismiss Mitch McConnell and others for doing this?
Well, that's correct. If they were regular jurors, without a doubt, they would not be allowed to continue sitting on the jury. However, they're not regular jurors. They actually are the judge, jurors, and they determine the punishment. I mean, the punishment is the ouster, so they don't really determine that. But They determine what rules apply. They determine what questions to ask. And they determine whether witnesses can be held. So, no, I mean, it's really not a parallel. And I know people want to draw that parallel, but it's a different process.
Doug in Goodwood. Doug, you're on with Don Cashew. Hi, Doug.
Good morning. I had a question getting back to the point made about obstruction. Does the fact that perhaps the House Democrats could have overcome the obstruction had they gone to the courts make the obstruction any less real? I don't understand that defense other than so he didn't get away with it, therefore it's not obstruction. It is obstruction.
Well, the president has the right and privilege to not respond in certain instances, and that's what he did. He exercised this executory right or privilege. If the House thought that was an unconstitutional exercise, they could have gone to the courts to undermine that and to overturn that, and they didn't. And so I think it undermines their argument in this instance.
Leonard on Airline. Leonard, you're on Talk Louisiana with Don Cashew.
Yeah, how you doing today, Jeff?
Fine.
I just wanted to ask the gentleman if they were so concerned about Biden and his corruption, why didn't they investigate it when they had the House and they had the Senate?
Well, Leonard, you bring up a good point. That's true for a variety of issues, right? You have politicians who say, boy, this is what should have happened, or this is what should have been done. But when they have the opportunity to do it, they don't do it themselves. And I say they. I was a politician as well, so I need to include myself in that criticism. But in this case, yeah, one of the defenses is that the president was legitimately interested in the corruption in the Ukraine. And therefore, that's a valid request rather than a personal request. That's an argument. I think that, it's kind of a stretch, but they're certainly making that argument.
Thank you, Don Cashew. Always a pleasure. And fine gentleman who took his lumps in politics, still comes on the radio with us. And,
thank you, Jim.
We'll be calling again soon.
Appreciate Thank you, buddy.
And we'll return with John Miller, Baton Rouge developer, the guy who gave us the Country Club of Louisiana. We'll talk with him about his association with Jack Nicklaus.